Welcome to Claim Your Confidence, a podcast that will introduce you to the most powerful people in the world. No matter what obstacles you face, Claim Your Confidence will inspire and motivate you to go after the life you want. Are you ready to claim your confidence?
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Claim Your Confidence. I'm Lydia Finette, sitting in Newsstand Studios on a blustery, cold, rainy day in New York City. But wow, is there an incredible woman sitting across from me who's about to change that whole dynamic. Everyone, I am so excited to have my friend and the designer of Boohoo, CEO, founder, all the things, Morgan Hutchinson, sitting here today. Welcome to Claim Your Confidence.
Oh, thank you so much, Lydia. What an honor to be here. I cannot think of a more fun way to spend a rainy day in New York City than to be in this precious studio with a friend of, I'm not even going to say how many years now, because there's really no need to age us, but it's an honor, and I'm so proud of everything you've done, built, and it's just exciting to be here and chat with you today.
Well, in true Morgan fashion, and if you know Morgan, which I do, because as you've said, we've known each other for a long time, I was sitting in the podcast booth, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw this incredible sort of red brocade jacket pantsuit with red shoes and 9 suitcases. It was almost like my brain didn't even have to register. It was like, oh, there's Morgan. It was so fun. And you can't not see Morgan and Boohoo and immediately just think happy, bright, amazing.
Well, I do love to dress in a lot of color. I am from the South, after all, and even though I haven't lived in the South in a lot of years, I still bring color everywhere I go, and I also bring a lot of suitcases.
It's so true. I don't
call it baggage, although there's some of that too, but I do bring a lot of luggage wherever I go.
It's incredible. So we're going to start at the beginning. I know so much about you. This is going to be such a fun interview, so buckle up, everyone. We got a lot of questions and a lot of ground to cover. You grew up in Murray, Kentucky. Tell me about Morgan Hutchinson, the child.
Morgan Hutchinson, the child. I'm an only child, first of all. My mom never wanted me to be a stereotypical only child, although I actually hate that expression because I think most only children I meet are really cool, neat people. So she pushed me a lot. She wanted me out of my comfort zone. They encouraged me to be whoever I wanted to be. I don't know that it took that much encouragement. Probably a little bit like, whoa, maybe not that much. But I grew up in a very small town. And I think growing up in a small town can sort of do one of two things. It can make you feel like a big fish sometimes, which gives you a sense of confidence. And I think Murray was a very supportive community that sort of gathered around and acted as a giant group of cheerleaders. And that's how I felt with friends and family. So that when good things happened to us, they cheered us on. And when they didn't, they were a net. So even though I grew up being clueless about many of the things happening in the world or the opportunities that were out there, I should say, I think that that safety net and that confidence boosting community really helped me become who I am today. And I sort of took little steps to get to the big city. So I left Murray and went to the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa, which was a town about 10 times as big as Murray. And then from there, I moved to Austin, Texas for a bit, which was about 10 times the size of Tuscaloosa, and then eventually made my way to New York, which is likely where we met in the early 2000s for the first time. And I started a lingerie company in my 20s with my two best friends who were also from Murray, Kentucky.
And that is actually where our paths intersect, because my younger brother was dating one of Morgan's best friends at the time. And so you came roaring onto the scene into my life with Kim and her twin sister, Kim and Mary Kay, who I need you to explain to me how Passport Panties, which was the name of the lingerie company, started. Because you've been an entrepreneur since the minute I met you. I mean, there is no question.
Yes. And I think that's why I bring it up, is because I think once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur. But I think you have to have the confidence to know, okay, wait, this may not be my end path. So Passport Panties was wonderful. I mean, we came up with the concept while we were living here. It was sort of this girl on the go. It eventually evolved into beautiful shapewear, sort of before that was even a concept or an idea that shapewear could be pretty. And then the financial crisis happened and things became difficult. Our production partners became difficult, just because the world was changing so much. And my two amazing partners were both pregnant with their first. And I met my husband, which he was in the process of moving to Beijing, China. So literally, there couldn't have been more going on in about a 3 to 4 month period. And I said, I think I got to go and follow this man, which seems not confident in a way to follow a man, but he had really changed my life. He walked into the car lot one night and just flipped everything upside down. And my dad told me that perhaps I was living in a layover if I stayed in New York while we were doing this long distance thing back and forth. There were a lot of airplane puns at the time with passport panties because we dressed as flight attendants for our marketing.
Oh, and, that's right.
You know, there was just a lot about travel there. So we made the decision to dissolve passport panties at that time. It was a hard decision, but it was the right decision for all of us. And they moved on to amazing things. We're still the best of friends. And then I did move to Beijing eventually.
But I want to take it back to passport panties because to me, there are all these lessons that we learn over the course of our life as entrepreneurs. We learn one moment at a time. And I suspect having been and lived and sort of seen that whole company come together, there were so many amazing things that you learned about marketing and branding from passport panties. So talk to me a little bit about how you guys came up with the concept, how you guys sort of created this brand and what that took in terms of marketing and branding, what you took from that ultimately to Boohoo.
Absolutely. You know, with any of our careers, I would say mine has been very winding. It is not a straight path. I'm always amazed at people who have like, this is what I'm doing and I'm going to do it. Boohoo, our women's clothing brand now, is a culmination of everything I've learned from every experience. I'll never forget. So when we first started it, there was this sort of kitschiness to it. We dressed as like vintage flight attendants in pink suits with red pillbox hats. The sizes were window, middle, and aisle. And I know you can't see what I'm doing, but I'm pretending I'm a flight attendant telling you where the emergency exits are. But we really wanted to create this personality behind it so that when you were buying the product, you really sort of fell in love with the whole story and it made you smile. I want all the clothes to make you smile, to make you feel special and happy because life is so serious and what you're wearing should always make you smile. It should never be a stressful decision. It should never be gloomy. It should be happy. And there was so much happiness with passport panties in the marketing and really wanting to make people smile. And then there was also a huge learning curve in everything we did with passport panties was wholesale driven. It was about going to markets and selling to stores because in 2004 and five, the direct to consumer market was maybe, we used the same PR team, which was Polly Ryerson, who did Bonobos at the time. And so they were starting to really tap into that, you know, selling directly online. We weren't ready to go that in the amount of panties that you have to sell one at a time.
Yeah.
It's a lot. But I learned that I didn't want to start that way again. You know, when 2009 and 10 were going on and wholesale was really struggling, I think that that's what shifted me to know that I wanted Boohoo to be direct to consumer. So I learned that lesson there. And then the other lesson learned there was to have ownership in your production, which we can talk about way down the line. But because at the end of passport panties, where we really lost control was that we lost the trust in our overseas partner. We had some amazing potential partnerships with huge retail brands here. And one thing that's very different about America and perhaps the Asian market is if you wanted to be in an Asian department store, you could actually rent space. The big boys get to do that in America. So like Louis Vuitton can rent the space. But small guys, the buyer has to prove everything that they want to have. So when a big buyer said, your nude is a little dark or your nude is a little light, okay, let's fix it. And our partner didn't understand that caused friction. And then just financially, the world was shifting. And so I realized if I ever do this again, I've got to be in control of a huge portion of the production, because when you're at the liberty of them, it's terrifying for one. I mean, you have people who want to buy your product and you can't make it.
It's got to be so frustrating. As you said, Brett was going to Beijing and you basically upped your life and moved to Beijing.
The worst thing that happens is I get over there and this relationship isn't what I thought. And I moved back. I packed 15 suitcases and moved to Beijing. And really my family was super supportive, even as like my mom saying goodbye to her only child. But it was a wonderful experience. And we were there for 4 years.
And it was during that time that you became pregnant with your first child?
Made in China, but born in the USA, barely. So we thought that she would be born in China. We had done all the paperwork so that she would, you know, have all the proper documentation to be an American citizen. And then the company sold. So Brett had gone over there to do due diligence for a group of car dealerships that was actually owned by Citigroup at the time. And they needed to get it off their books during the financial crisis. business in any country, it's particularly interesting to do business in a country with a closed economy.
Right.
But we made amazing friends. We had incredible opportunities to travel all over Asia. And we really made incredible relationships with partners over there because we still do some of our production with an amazing family-owned factory in southern China. So again, kind of accumulating these little breadcrumbs with every experience of life and making sure that you're listening, you're paying attention, and having the confidence to go out, ask the questions, and meet the people. I knew no one when I moved to Beijing other than my husband, who was not my husband at the time, actually. And he worked a ton. I mean, they were trying to get this dealership group off the ground and buy more dealerships. And so I was alone a lot. And I remember I was like, well, I just went and got all the magazines that were in English. You know how like there's a Time Out Beijing?
Yeah. Okay?
So there are all these different versions for expats. And in the back of them, there would be like, on Tuesday night, there is a group that gets together to play trivia. I literally started just pulling out ones that seemed interesting, that were close to me, that I knew the space, that were at a cool hotel or a spot I wanted to see. And I started going to these networking events. Anytime I saw a blonde, I would literally chase her down just so I could ask her maybe where she's getting her hair colored. And so I slowly started making friends. And I realized I was 28 when I moved over there. And there was a big age gap. There were 22-year-olds who were there teaching English as a second language. And then there were 40-plus who were executives or executive wives raising children over there in the expat schools. And so I felt like I had two completely different groups of friends. And then eventually, I ended up being out. And speaking of your clothes providing joy, when you don't know anyone in a town and you love to play dress up as much as I do, I just let it all go. And I had so much fun playing in my own clothes that eventually I caught the eye of this amazing woman named Mei Li, who did the expat spread called Fashion Icon. It was once a month. And in one of those magazines that I was like stalking to find network events.
Suddenly you're the cover girl.
Yeah, I was. And I met her. She became a dear friend. And eventually she asked me to start styling photo shoots for her.
Oh, wow.
And so
I'm loving this evolution of just be yourself.
The thing is, yes. I was truly just
yes.
being myself.
Be yourself. That is such a great
and
way.
And meeting these people that wanted to get to know me.
Yeah.
Which was great. And then made me feel good because I wasn't putting on any airs. I was just being myself. And I started accumulating friends. And so when I was styling for her, it was really fun. Some of them would be commercial and a little bit buttoned up. Some of them, it didn't matter. Sometimes I was pulling from my own wardrobe or I was going and, you know, doing all the shopping and pulling. But when I look back now, I see, you know, Passport Panties was teaching me how to sell, how to build a website. Then in Beijing, I was doing styling and figuring out how to piece things together, work with different body types, because it was at a time when a lot of companies were going in to Beijing because they could afford to do these beautiful photo shoots because the teams were there. It was just so much less expensive to do these big projects there versus here in the US. And so I learned that. And then eventually, Brett and I got married over there. And so we made Olive in China, and then the business sold to a Chinese national company. Brett came home. I was already 7 months pregnant, and he was like, this is going to sell, and it's going to sell really fast. I think we need to figure out how we get you home to America safely. And so we moved to Kentucky, and Olive was born 3 weeks like after my plane touched down.
Oh, my gosh.
So I was so pregnant on that flight home. About 2 weeks after Olive was born, and we were having lunch, and I had, you know, just put on something that was comfortable that fit my post-baby body. And when we were at the restaurant with friends and family, she wanted to eat. And I realized, oh, I've worn a turtleneck dress.
Oh, God.
No way to feed her.
Yeah.
And no one had ever talked about that. And so ultimately, that was the little light bulb in my head saying, why aren't there clothes I want to wear? Why aren't there clothes that are easy for me to buy that are going to accommodate not just the nursing? Because who knows how long that's going to last either. Everyone is different. You get to choose your path. I did end up nursing all 3 children for a while. But I was also changing age-wise. What was in my closet was so clearly not going to be the things I needed every single day for this new role.
Yeah.
Especially in the first few years. And so really, that's when I said to Brett, I said, I think that there's no one speaking to women. Murray, where I grew up, is about 2 hours from Nashville. And that's the only town that has any decent shopping anywhere near it. So we like drove to Nashville one day. We went through all the major department stores that were there. It was so time consuming to dig through. Everything was dry clean only. and beautiful, but I was like, who has the time to do this? And, you know, Olive had a blowout at some point. It was just really a miserable experience. So I said to him, I said, I think there's something here, but the last thing I want to do is manufacture. I just, you know, the PTSD from all of that was still very real and I wasn't ready to do it. And I said, but I think we could curate. I think we could curate something where we're picking from brands that women know and love. And because I had the wholesale experience, that felt very comfortable to me to come up to Coterie, which is a big women's wear trade show that happens at Javits 2 to 3 times a year. I said, I think we should come up with a name that's short and sweet. Maybe it is definitive of something in our lives. And I'd studied Mandarin for the 4 years we were there. And I said, what if it was Buru? It's 4 letters. It means to breastfeed in Mandarin. No one will really know that. It can be this undercurrent, but it will not be an English word. So it would be easier to trademark and all the things if, in fact, the business made sense to continue. So we went with it. And I was very naive to think that these brands would be like, that sounds great. Let's write an order. And I remember, you know, like the first 6 booths we went to, we're like, well, who else do you carry? Oh, well, come back to us when you have a brand matrix. So I'm like Googling brand matrix. We make our way to the back and you can start to see, you know, you're recognizing less and less brand names. And I'm thinking, well, maybe there's newer brands like us and we can start there. And then all of a sudden I look up and I see a familiar face and it's Rebecca Minkoff.
Oh my gosh.
So this is where Passport Panties also comes back into play, because when she launched the Morning After bag, her PR company reached out to our PR company.
Oh, I bet they did. We have to stuff those bags.
And we had Passport Panties in the Morning After bags for her launch party. So I'd met her all those years ago, and I was like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? Well, this is when like motherhood also plays a role. She had just had a baby. She was nursing the baby. And so she had such an appreciation. She's like, well, what are you doing now? So I tell her she had such an appreciation. She said, well, here. She walks me straight into her booth. They have a new website. They want to write an order. It's great. And I was like, thank you so much. So we wrote an order. And then every booth we went into, they were like, "Where? Who else do you
Rebecca
carry?
Minkoff.
Rebecca Minkoff. And then, you know, then the dominoes would fall. But I try to mention her as much as possible because she is one of those pay it forward people.
Oh, she is part of the New York City fashion ecosystem.
And she is. And
such
of women.
A true supporter of women.
It's such an innate part of her personality. And it's amazing. And I always think of her like, what can I be doing to help be that little, let someone behind the curtain so they can start?
Yeah.
And it was such an easy thing for her, really. And I always am reminded of that. Like, what's the easy thing that you can do that really kickstarts someone else?
Yeah.
And there's so many things because you just need a little boost sometimes.
Yes.
So that she was a little boost. And so then we started picking up.
I actually didn't even know that.
It's a neat part of the story. And we eventually got up to about 50 brands. And at that point, Brett had been offered an opportunity in Salt Lake City. So we had moved to Salt Lake. But I was pregnant with our second, and Brett said, hey, our gross profit margin is 10%. And I felt like I knew that was bad.
Mm-hmm. You're like, yes.
Yes. And he was like, that's really bad. I was like, no.
Right. Right.
Right. You know, we're co-founders together, and now we work exclusively together. But we each have our own lanes. His would be the finance lane.
Yeah.
Okay, this is not sustainable. And he's like, I just don't understand why you're not designing. You know what you want. You know what's still missing in the market, what we can't find when we go to market. And he said, it's been a long time since the production. Let's try it. Let's try something different. You know, we have all of those contacts in China. Let's do it. So I designed, I think, a 12-piece capsule. And we've had the same PR company, which is amazing. It's Jackie Thompson.
Yeah.
She said, let's launch it. I think it'll be great. And it was. And it was great. And we filled a price point that we were starting that was kind of disappearing in the wholesale market because everything was just getting more and more expensive and it sold. And he was like, great, let's go. But I was a little bit chicken to just drop all the brands at once. Plus, it's one thing to design 12 pieces. If you're not, the second those are in motion, you better have the next 12 or 24 already going. It is such a constant.
Yeah.
Like the designing is such a constant because when that sells, it's not like you have nothing else to sell if you haven't been designing the next round. We really leaned into it. And it took about 2.5 years to sort of remove all the brands, maybe just 2 years, just because you buy so far in advance. And we went from 50 to about 20 and then to 10 and 4. And then finally it was All Buru in January 2019.
And at what point here, because this was a great story, when I interviewed you with Brett at the Southern Sea, mm-hmm. and I was going through my own things at work and trying to figure out what my next step would be post-Christie's. And I interviewed you guys right at that time in my career. And I will never forget an incredible conversation with you guys. And Brett was talking about that moment where, I don't remember at what point in this story of your company this was, but he had a big job. And he was let go. And he literally was like, I don't ever want to work for a company again. I want to work with you. So talk to me a little bit about that. Because I know there are a lot of women who work with their husbands, and I do too. And I love this story because it was what I wanted, but I didn't know it until I heard you guys talking about it.
Brett does a great job. And sometimes I hate that, you know, I'm the face of our brand.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I'm the person who wears it. I talk about them. I design it. But he is such an integral part of the business.
Yeah.
And he still has the job. He's not liking it. I'm really early pregnant with Schaefer. And so in that amount of time, we design those 12 pieces. We get them produced. They go to market. I'm pretty pregnant when we do the photo shoot. But he's miserable where he is. But at the same time, I mean, anyone who started a business, we're a self-funded bootstrap business.
Yeah.
To this day, we've never taken on funding. And that's very hard to do. I think it's wonderful to take on funding. I think each business has its own path. For us, because we want to go at a pace that can include our children, we've been very cautious and very careful with every decision so that they could be our decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And that often means a slower pace. You know, in terms of if when you start comparing, which of course is the thief of all joy, and I constantly remind myself of that. Schaefer was 3 weeks old, and we had just had Thanksgiving, and there's like 17 inches of snow on the ground. Salt Lake City, I don't drive well. Somebody thought it was a good idea to get me one of those huge Suburbans. I'd already taken out half the garage. We'd renovated this 100-year-old home. And I remember walking around the Monday after Thanksgiving, and I was praying, and I was like, God, thank you so much, you know, for my two beautiful children, my husband, and for letting me renovate this house from top to bottom and decorate it. Like, what a joy in theory, but it is not bringing me any more joy. It's not, it's a thing. And so I was like, thank you. I guess thanks, but no thanks. And then on Tuesday, Brett came home and said he was fired. And I thought,
that's not
okay,
what I meant.
Well, God was listening, and there went the rug out from underneath us.
I will be careful about my prayers this time.
Yes. But it was, I mean, it is one of those things. It really was. And I don't think we would have had the courage with a 3 week old.
Yes.
I think that 6 months down the road, maybe we would have.
Yeah.
But it's hard to say goodbye to a salary, and very scary when you are responsible for two very small children at that point, 3 weeks and 4 years old. And so that really got things moving. And at the same time, my sister-in-law, who lived in Los Angeles, was being offered an amazing job back in New York. And so they have this really cool, or had, it's now ours, which is grateful for this, it's really cool two-story loft in the Arts District of downtown LA. It's like a little microcosm of LA. We had been talking about how we love the production partner we're working with in China. We want to keep that going. But what if one day we could do domestic production as well? And I really feel like, of course, there's a small amount of that in New York. But just because there's a lack of space here, that part's shrinking. And in Los Angeles, I think it has the opportunity to grow. And so we were like, maybe this is our sign. You know, you got fired. We really are about to not have a home pretty soon because we obviously are going to have to sell this thing. And this space is open and something that was affordable. We felt like we could do it. We got the house on the market, moved to Los Angeles. And I remember we got there so late at night and we open up to this loft with nothing in it.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, downtown Los Angeles looks different at night than it does in the day with the palm trees.
Yeah.
And he was still unloading stuff. We have these Sprinter vans that act like stores. He was unloading stuff from there. And I set down the baby in the bucket and Olive was sitting there. She was starving. I had no idea what to feed her. I didn't even know where to order or do whatever yet. And I just sat there and cried. And I thought, what have we done? And I gave myself about 3 minutes. And then I was like, do not let her see you be scared. Not to say you can't show your child emotions, but in that moment, I need to show her we can do this.
Yeah.
I was like, let's find pizza.
Yeah.
We're going to find pizza. And I'll never forget, we found this one called like Pizza Nista. And it was like this fashionable pizza. And they delivered, and we had a picnic on the ground and we slept on air mattresses until our stuff came for about, you know, 5 days maybe. And then we just hit the ground running finding fabric suppliers, finding people who could produce domestically to really enhance and create a whole new arm of Buru with a not a different look. I mean, there's such a cohesiveness with all the designs, but just something that offered small batch apparel made in the USA.
It's so fun to wear Buru around New York City because it is so bright and there's so much color and the patterns are beautiful. And there's never a day where I wear something that is Buru that I don't get stopped ever. I have people
that's wonderful
who,
to hear.
Like, and I mean that across the board. It doesn't matter where I am. I had this really good friend of mine who lives in New York and grew up in New York and is dressed in black head to toe. I came up in one of your day dresses, which are just long dresses. They're the most comfortable things to wear on a hot day in New York City. You can go anywhere in the city. You always look put together and polished, which is really a signature of Buru. It's like you could literally can wear any piece and go anywhere. You can add earrings and add heels. You can take it to flats and sandals. And I remember walking to pick up my kids and she looked at me and she goes, I literally could never wear anything you wear, but I'm so jealous every time you show up in one of those things. And that's what I kept thinking. I was like, no, you could, but I actually don't think she could. Yeah. I think it would break her soul if she weren't. But it really is such a signature of your style that, as I said, I saw the red and white come through. And if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see this. And if you're listening to this, you can sort of hear it's like this incredible brocade jacket. And it's raining and disgusting outside in New York City. But this look is chic and polished, and you could be like hanging out at the St. Regis in Hong Kong, or you could be sitting with me here, or you could be headed to the airport with your 18 suitcases, and you always look put together.
I will be wearing this on the plane later tonight. But I think that for me, I want a closet that makes me happy to walk into, and I want a closet that makes me feel like I can leave in the morning, and whatever happens, it can work. I can take off the jacket, I can change the shoe. And really, that's where the styling came in. And so everything on our website now is styled three ways. A big way that we launch collections is through try-ons and showing our customer the value of each piece and how it can be a coat or it can be a dress. And here's all the ways you can wear it, where you can wear it. But I realize when so many women kept saying, oh, I don't know how to style. I don't know how to style it.
I could never wear that.
Dawned on me, this is how I feel in a grocery store. And so let's just show them as many ways as possible. So even on our website, you know, there's like lifestyle pretty pictures and flat lays to show the details. But then when you scroll down, there's this section called Styled for Days. And it has selfies, truly selfies that tag every product that goes with it, or just gives them ideas like a little recipe book.
Yeah.
For clothes.
It's exactly like the closet in Clueless.
And because she needs help. We all do. I need help with making a meal.
Yes.
So we all have different things that come naturally to us. And styling and having fun getting dressed is something that has always come naturally to me. And there's always been a very vintage look to my style.
Yep.
I've joked that I've been dressing like a 45-year-old woman since I was 12.
Yeah.
Now it's appropriate.
Now it's appropriate.
Now I am that woman. But my first like Christmas dance dress in the seventh grade was a vintage dress from the 60s that had fur at the bottom with a boat neck. And I think that I've always wanted to be wearing something a little bit different. And what we hear from our customers is, thank you for pushing me to wear something different. I get compliments when I'm out and it makes me feel so confident.
Buru's tagline should be one of my favorite things that I ever saw on Instagram and post quite regularly, which is the phrase, dress like you're going somewhere better later.
Yes.
Because I've always felt like that. My mom is British. I grew up in the South. Like, we're just a more formal household. My mom is, I've never seen my mom without a full face of makeup. Actually, mom, I don't even know when you put the makeup on. Always put together, whether it be like taking us to the airport at 5 a.m. I'm like, I don't think you need a scarf, mom, to take me to the airport. I think you're okay. But it's just, it's so much a part of who she is. And as a result, it's very much a part of who I am. And I really respect people who show up dressed for things. And I love that about you. I've always loved that about you. So let me ask you one thing about the clothes that you have and the happiness that it exudes. There is one other piece of you which you've been very open about. And I love to talk about this because I do feel like you have been so open about your struggles with mental health and in particular having bipolar disorder. So tell me a little bit about that evolution over the course of your life and how where you are now and being able to talk about it so openly on social has been helpful or perhaps not for you.
Oh, it's extremely helpful. I was diagnosed at 27, so the year before I met Brett. And there were some very dark times, but I have always found that when I'm not being my truest self, I'm exhausted by it. It's wasting so much energy. If you're not being you, then you're just spending energy that's not taking you anywhere. You're not meeting new people. You're literally like almost hiding such a big part of yourself. And social media, when you have a direct-to-consumer brand, when you have a very visual-focused brand, you're on social media. And for me, the thought of us promoting these clothes in any way that wasn't actually authentic and my truest self felt like a waste of energy. It felt like I, you know, if I was trying to hide something about me, think about, I can write an Instagram caption in about 30 seconds when I'm being me. If I'm trying to hide something or I'm not feeling myself that day, that's when I'm overthinking. I'm doing all these things and decided really early on, I'm just going to talk about all of this. And so many people deal with mental health issues, whether it's them as a human being a family member. Yeah. And so I've tried to be really open. I'm also sensitive now that my children are getting older, but that's why we are very open with my conversation with them. You know, I don't want it to be scary. They see me take my medicine every day. You know, a lot of my psychiatry appointments are over the phone now because I'm busy and constantly traveling, but I do what I have to do to take care of myself.
Yeah.
I think all women, moms of little children, are often neglect to take care of themselves.
Yes.
Just because there's only so much time in the day. And we tend to put ourselves on the bottom of the totem pole. But if you are dealing with mental health, you do not have that luxury when it comes to your health. I may have not seen the inside of a gym in a lot of years, but I take my medicine every day and I am on it with my doctors and making sure. And I think that talking about it is healing.
Yeah.
Because you don't feel like you're hiding something.
Yeah.
When you feel like you're hiding, then I don't feel confident in who I am. If I am literally like, you know, trying to hide under a blanket, then I'm just not being me. And it's not something I want my children to see either. I do not think there's anything to be ashamed of. I always say like, I have diabetes of the brain. You know, it's just a chemical imbalance. And if there's nothing wrong with diabetes, then there's nothing wrong with mental illness.
Yeah. It's a running theme in this podcast to be yourself, whether it be you dressing up in Hong Kong and meeting all of your friends, whether you on social media being yourself. And to all of the listeners out there who I always say at the end of a podcast, you know, think about this or do this, I would just say to you, be yourself, be the truest version of yourself. Because if you show up as yourself, you're not hiding anything. You're not waiting for anyone to aha you. You're not waiting for anyone to tell everyone that you're not who you say you are. Because if you show up like that in life, you will live a confident life because there's no one but you and you are showing up in your own skin.
In terms of being me, we took the kids to Asia over Christmas. So they went with us and saw the factories and then we did some time in Vietnam just for Christmas. And on our flight back from Hanoi to Hong Kong, because we spent a few days there before we flew home, we're on the flight and this woman runs on and she's just looks like they were probably delayed and she's so glad to make the flight. And I just randomly say to her, oh my gosh, you made it. I have no idea who she is. It just looked like if I would want someone to cheer me on if I'd made it with my children on the flight.
Yeah.
And she looked at me and she's like, oh my gosh, you do dress like this all the time. She knew who I was.
That's amazing.
And I looked at Olive and I was like, see, this is why we're our truest selves
all the time. Because you never know.
I mean, my mouth was like wide open.
That is so funny.
But again, it is. I want to be dressed up all the time. And it is sort of, you know, Stacy, this amazing woman who owns a store in Charleston, always says that your clothes are sort of like your armor.
Stacy Smallwood, Hampton.
Right. And I think that there's truth in that. Or it's just when you dress like you, then you feel more like you. I think women also want encouragement to dress that way because we do live in a much more casual world.
Yeah.
And I always say like clothes aren't saving any lives. Like we are not in the business of saving lives, but maybe we're in the business of like saving your day sometimes.
Yeah.
When you're just in it, when you're in the trenches and you just need something to lift you up and put a smile on your face. You know, that's what Buru has done for me, meeting our customers. It's so rewarding when you feel like you've really helped someone in a very small way. I'll give it to you, but it is so rewarding.
Well, I will say you have absolutely made my day, Morgan. It has been such a pleasure to have you in Newsstand Studios. You've brightened this entire dreary New York City day with your smile and your amazing story. Thank you for being here. I cannot thank you enough because I know you're on your way to the airport. Thank you for spending this time with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a true honor. And just any time with you is always a treat.
Morgan, where can we watch you, follow along? What do we do to make sure that we are completely abreast of everything Buru is
absolutely.
Doing?
Absolutely. So if you're ever out in LA, you can come see our amazing factory.
Oh, go
but
see
now,
it. It's so cool.
We have like 40 full-time sewers. There's an atelier in the top part. So we do atelier appointments, which is so fun. We've truly built it one sewing machine at a time. So we no longer use outside sourcing domestically. It's our own production team, which is amazing.
It's really cool. I've seen it. It's a very cool
thing
to see.
And we give glimpses of it, of course, on the website, which is shopburu.com, and on Instagram is at shopburu, where you can see new arrivals every Saturday and a fun try-on to help you style your Buru pieces.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Well, I will be following along. Thank you again for being here, Morgan.
Thank you so much.
Of course. And I want to thank Joe, as always, for being with us on this rainy day. Thank you to Tishman Spire, to Newsstand Studios, for giving us this amazing podcast studio to be in and to spend time talking. I'm Lydia Finette. This is Claim Your Confidence. I'll be back with you again next Tuesday. In the meantime, have a great week.